Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you all for calling in today. In line with the most recent recommendations, we are holding this mini conference via telephone. I am sure every one of you has been inundated, particularly over the last few days, with news and information about the coronavirus, also known as COVID-19. I know that I have. Every time you turn on the TV or read an article now, it seems as if all other news has basically disappeared. We've been hearing about how the virus has and will continue to spread, the numerous and serious health concerns, as well as the inevitable political and economic fallout of all of this. Now, what we haven't really been hearing about are the legal implications of this virus, and that's what we're going to touch upon today. I say touch upon because there are going to be numerous legal implications across many different practice areas that are going to only begin to unfold now. Because of obvious health and public safety concerns that are, of course, of the utmost importance, we're only going to see the bulk of the legal implications and fallout from this virus once the concerns about health dissipate and things are somewhat back to normal from a public health perspective, which, of course, is understandable. Reviewing our list of attendees here today, I see that we have professionals from various industries, including insurance, retail, logistics, manufacturing, and not-for-profits, just to name a few. This call is meant to go for approximately 15 minutes and cover some of the most common legal issues that at least some, if not all of you, may come across because of this virus, and discuss how we can best navigate this novel and unique set of circumstances. Because of the abridged nature of this conference, the call has been muted, and I would ask that if you have any specific questions or comments, that you contact me or my colleagues directly. I would also like to stress that, like the medical situation with this virus, the legal landscape is also extremely fluid, and things may be changing daily, if not hourly. We are keeping our ear to the ground, as they say, for all the latest updates and information. The first major issue that many businesses, particularly those in the industries relating to the delivery of goods and services that rely on goods, is the inevitable inability or extreme difficulty in fulfilling their contracts. Businesses will experience difficulty in fulfilling contracts for a few different reasons, including difficulty in procuring and receiving goods from overseas, particularly from China, and the diminished availability of workers due to sickness, quarantine, or other virus-related impediments. Traditionally, under the principles of contract law, we would rely on force majeure provisions. What is force majeure? An event that excuses or suspends performance of a contract in extraordinary times, which typically includes war, strike, government order, or act of God, which is a natural event, a hurricane, or an earthquake. The first question to ask is, does your contract have a force majeure provision? If it does, the next question is, does that provision include outbreak or virus? And in the event of litigation, would the court find that the coronavirus excused performance? Unfortunately, there is no uniform answer to that question. The application of force majeure provisions will depend on the specific language of the clause and the choice of law that applies under the particular contract. For example, disputes may arise on whether or not companies did enough to find alternative supplies not sourced from China or other regions more heavily afflicted with the virus. And then the next inevitable question becomes, what does it mean to do enough to find these alternatives? The answers, again, are going to be very situation and industry specific. Now, what if your contract does not contain a force majeure clause? In that case, you may be able to rely on the doctrines of impracticability or frustration of purpose. Does the situation at hand make performance of the contract impracticable or impossible? Without specific language pertaining to force majeure, a contract for the sale of goods is governed by the Uniform Commercial Code, also known as the UCC. The UCC provides for the basic assumption that if there is a world-altering event and contract performance has become impracticable, the seller may not be responsible for the terms or expectations of the original contract under some circumstances. For some organizations, this may provide an alternative excuse from performance. Excuse where performance is impracticable, by the occurrence of an event, the non-occurrence of which was a basic assumption when it was made. Again, whether or not this doctrine applies will depend on the specific language of your contract. If you're currently faced with an inability to fulfill your contractual obligations, or are on the other side of the coin, where you are expecting performance on a contract, and the other party is unable to perform, you should consider the following. First, you need to understand and evaluate the impact that the outbreak has on your inability to perform your obligations under the contract. And consider the other party's obligations and whether they are also adversely affected. You need to monitor the situation closely, which I'm sure everyone is doing. It's pretty much impossible not to do so. Be mindful of any notice provisions. Force majeure clauses often require these. Many contracts require that a party seeking to assert force majeure as a basis for suspending or terminating performance must provide notice to its counterparty, and failure to provide timely notice may result in waiver of the provision or have other adverse consequences. For contracts involving the sale of goods, the Uniform Commercial Code requires that the party in receipt of a force majeure notice respond within 30 days or the contract will lapse with respect to any affected deliveries. Keep detailed records that include the scope of the interruption to your business and detail the factors leading to impossibility or hurdles to performance. And finally, consider practical solutions to legal issues. Try to negotiate a compromise or mutual agreement to move events to a time after the crisis is over, because both parties ultimately want to encourage full performance, and this is really in everyone's best interest. While you may be able to successfully invoke a force majeure provision, consider the future impact of this on your business relationship. Looking towards the future, consider drafting force majeure clauses in your future contract. Because if drafted precisely, these can serve basically as a life preserver to a company faced with unforeseen circumstances beyond their control, like we're seeing now. And of course, if drafted incorrectly, a force majeure provision in a contract is really only an illusion of protection and will not save a company from unforeseeable pitfalls. Finally, review your insurance coverage and how that can help mitigate any losses. And this brings me to the next point of how insurance is likely going to be treating business losses sustained as a result of COVID-19. The inability to fulfill a business contract or the failure of one of your business partners or clients to fulfill their contractual obligations will inevitably lead to business losses. Business interruption insurance, intended to protect businesses against losses sustained as a result of disruption of their operations. Typically, these policies or riders require a direct physical loss or damage to an insured property by a covered cause of the loss. Insurers responding to claims for business interruption due to COVID-19 may dispute whether the physical loss requirement has been met, and we've already been seeing some of that happen. Many jurisdictions hold that contamination or other incidents that render the place of business uninhabitable or unfit for use constitutes a physical loss. Some policies and the extensions added to standard property policies, particularly those in the hospitality and healthcare industries, expressly provide for losses sustained as a result of communicable or infectious diseases without requiring physical damage to insured property. Business income loss is sustained when a civil authority prohibits or impairs access to a policyholder's premises, which has been happening all around with the authorities effectively shutting down many businesses considered to be non-essential. Another type of insurance is political risk insurance, and this may, under some limited circumstances, provide coverage for business interruption losses suffered by a foreign entity's operations in a host country resulting from local government regulatory actions. Disruptions resulting from health directives may not constitute contract frustration, but some political risk policies will afford coverage for business interruption even when there is no physical damage to business for actions taken by the host company's government. The Insurance Services Office, also known as the ISO, which develops many of the forms filed and used by the insurance industry in response to the coronavirus, recently came out with two business income endorsements particularly tailored for the coronavirus. There is a business interruption limited coverage for certain civil authority orders relating to coronavirus. And this is including orders restricting some modes of public transportation. At this time, these forms are advisory only and available to use by any carrier if they choose to do so. These endorsements provide limited coverage when and if there is a suspension of operations due to closure or quarantine at the insured location ordered by a civil authority attempting to avoid or limit spread of infection by coronavirus. Extend dependent property coverage, contingent business income for named locations if the policy includes dependent property coverage when there is an interruption in the insured's business due to the closure or quarantine to avoid or limit the spread of infection by a coronavirus ordered by a civil authority at the dependent property. This applies to income loss suffered by insured operating from a vehicle or mobile equipment if the policy is endorsed to recognize such vehicle-based operations. The endorsements specifically exclude intentional action by any person, group, organization, or sovereign state to introduce spread of the virus, cost to clean, disinfect, dispose of, or replace any property, cost to disinfect or dispose of any bodily fluids or waste materials, cost of testing for or monitoring the presence or absence of the virus, loss or expense due to fear of contagion, for example, when customers, tenants, or vendors avoid a part of the insured's premises that is not under quarantine, loss or expense related to absence of infected workers or those suspected of being infected, and any fines or penalties. Now, of course, whether these will be the new model for future pandemic endorsements from ISO is not yet clear. For now, it is up to the individual insurance carriers to decide whether or not they want to use these endorsements. The state of New Jersey, in response to the crisis, is considering a bill to eliminate the virus-related exclusion for business interruption policies. In New York, the Department of Financial Services just issued an order, basically, that all of the commercial property insurers that it regulates send out a clear and concise explanation of benefits regarding their business interruption coverage. We anticipate that there's going to be a significant uptick in litigation in the next few months regarding insurance coverage, which will inevitably include the denials of coverage and reservations of rights. In addition to insurance coverage issues, we will also be seeing litigation concerning the spreading of the coronavirus and whether organizations acted reasonably or negligently in transmitting the virus or in allowing the virus to spread within the organization. Liability has been imposed on individuals who have transmitted communicable diseases that harm others, as well as liability for exposing others to contagious or infectious disease. Liability for the spread of disease is usually difficult to prove because the elements of such a cause of action, which are duty, causation, and breach, can be difficult to establish. However, during pandemics such as this one, coupled with the technology and great public awareness that we have today, there are certainly going to be a good amount of lawsuits. These lawsuits are going to include bodily injury, someone that's going to say that they were infected with the virus because of someone else's failure to take appropriate steps in preventing transmittal. Last week, a Florida couple that was stuck aboard the Grand Princess cruise ship that had 21 cases of coronavirus are suing the parent company for $1 million. The lawsuit filed against that parent company alleges that the company acted negligently And that the couple are now at actual risk for immediate physical injury. The fascinating thing is that the lawsuit does not state that they actually have the virus. So the allegations are basically involving the failure to warn of the risk of getting the virus and the potential exposure. Other areas of litigation are products liability, most likely for medications and any new equipment or medications that are going to be used to try and treat the coronavirus. Professional medical negligence, failure to timely diagnose and appropriately treat signs and symptoms of the coronavirus. The hospitality industry is going to likely see claims by infected guests that are going to say, similar to the couple suing the cruise ship, that the hotel, for example, or other business didn't do enough to prevent the spread of the virus or to warn people of the imminent danger or potential for contracting the virus. Director and officers liability will also come into play for economic losses of certain corporations. There is so much out there right now on this constantly evolving situation that we could probably continue this call for another hour, if not more, but we would like to be respectful of everyone's time, and I'm sure most of you are juggling many obligations today between your businesses and your families, so I'm going to stop right here. I would like to stress again that these issues are rapidly evolving and that we are monitoring all the developments closely and have our finger on the pulse of the situation. If anyone has any questions or would like to discuss their specific situation, we are here for you. If you have a question regarding insurance coverage, the handling of claims, or actual or anticipated litigation, please contact me directly. If you have questions regarding decisions you may need to make regarding your employees, you can contact John Schmidt, who chairs Linda Burry's labor and employment practice. For those in the construction industry with questions about delays to ongoing projects or issues in starting new projects, please feel free to speak with Greg Vitale, chair of our firm's construction practice. Businesses with questions concerning force majeure clauses in their purchase, supply, and distribution contracts can contact Robert Anderson of the firm's corporate practice. And finally, anyone with questions about real estate transactions, commercial lease agreements, and issues between creditors and debtors can contact Monica Veer of the firm's real estate transactional practice. Thank you very much, and be safe.